Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. So glad that you have joined us today. Lots of news today about the law and criminal justice. Not only did President Obama just announce his pick for the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, Chief Judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals, D.C. Circuit, but here in Baltimore, a judge has approved a schedule of trials for police charged in the death of Freddie Gray to resume in May. Our topic today also deals with police. Nearly a year after the death of Freddie Gray, Baltimore is once again in the national headlines for the use of force by police, this time against a child. Early this month, Baltimore school police officer Anthony Spence was caught on cell phone video hitting and kicking a teenager at Reach Partnership School in Clifton Park. Fellow officer Severna Bias reportedly egged him on. It was later revealed that Officer Spence had previously been fired from the sheriff's office after falsely identifying a robbery suspect. Spence had a protective order against him in a separate case. Bias, the other officer, had an assault charge on her record. In the wake of that video, the school system placed both officers on administrative leave, and both are facing criminal charges. But this is not the first such video. In 2014, surveillance cameras captured footage of a Baltimore school officer hitting a middle school girl with a baton. And critics say the problems with school police run much deeper than the periodic violent incident that gets captured on video. Some are calling for the Department of Justice to include school police in its civil rights investigation into Baltimore policing practices. How prevalent are incidents like the one caught on camera at Reach Partnership School? What role are police filling in schools? Should police even be in schools? Joining me in the studio to talk through these questions is Carl Perry, Chief School Supports Officer for Baltimore City Public Schools. He oversees the school police. Welcome to Midday.
Well, thank you very much, Sheila. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Also in studio with us is Catherine Rabb, Education Policy Director of the nonprofit Advocates for Children and Youth. She's also co-chair of something called the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline, which we'll talk about. Thanks for being here, Catherine.
Thanks very much.
And another member of the coalition is Jennifer Egan. She's a juvenile public defender. Jennifer Egan is with us here in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's touch first on this incident at Reach Partnership. Carl Perry, how is it that the school system hired and retained these two officers? As I mentioned, they had contact of their own with the law. Spence was fired from the sheriff's department in 2002 after misidentifying a suspect. School Police Chief Marshall Goodwin was spokesman for the sheriff's office at that time. Why would the school system knowingly hire someone with this kind of record?
Well, I've been in my position since July 1st, 2015, and one of my departments is to oversee school police. Following this incident and the revelations of some of the hiring practices in the past, we're doing a thorough investigation to find out some of the things that took place in the past, and also to make significant improvements of not only our department, but all of the manners in which we meet the needs of our children.
Well, and I certainly realize that you were nowhere in sight when the decision that I just asked about, the decision to hire Officer Spence, was made. I think he's been on the force for 12 years, so that's a while ago. But what kind of screening is done of school police officers? And I should say Officer Akil Ham, acting chief of the school police, is also here with us, sharing a microphone with Mr. Perry. So, Officer Ham, what kind of screening is done?
Good afternoon, Ms. Cass. I'm glad to be here today. The screening practices for our department is you apply, you take a written exam, you take a physical agility test, which entails being able to run a mile and a half, being able to lift a certain weight. You take the physical agility as an oral interview that the candidates take as well. Once you pass the oral interview, there's a background screen where they talk to your neighbors, they talk to your previous employers. You take a psychological where they check your mental health. You take a true verification test that could either be a polygraph or a voice stress analysis test, and then you go through medical screening in order to be a member of the department.
Okay, and I ask you about the current system, so I'm not asking you to say what was done 12 years ago, but you mentioned a background screening. So if someone showed up applying for a school police officer job now with that kind of a criminal record, would he or she be considered to be hired?
Not right now under my command. I've been in this position since last week. I can't speak to the past, but I can say that we hire in accordance with the Maryland Police and Training Commission guidelines on certification of officers in the state of Maryland.
Catherine Webb, what was your reaction when you heard about the incident early this month?
Like so many people, I was shocked and appalled to see what happened in that video. Unfortunately, it's not totally different from some of the things we've known to be going on in schools over the past many years. One thing that we know that is different about Baltimore City is that Baltimore City is the one of 24 jurisdictions across the state that employs its own police force. The city schools. The school system has its own police force. We spend about $9 million every year on employing the school system's own police force. And in addition to doing that, because of that, we don't have the same level of transparency or accountability that other school systems have with the police that come into our schools.
Explain that to me. That's not at all obvious to me. Jennifer Egan, if you want to jump in on this, I don't see why it would be any. Say I'm a parent. It doesn't. I don't see why I'd have any more understanding if there were a school resource officer. That's what most jurisdictions call police who are detailed into schools. If there's a school resource officer compared to a school police officer on a separate force?
There are a couple of distinctions. One is that the school system does not collect data about what's happening with police contact and students. So we really don't have an accounting of how many arrests, referrals to law enforcement there are, what the contact is with students, when force is used. We've been asking for those data for over a year now and have not to this point received anything. Another problem is there are no policies delineating the role of police in our school system. So there is nothing saying when police officers can interact with a student, when they should be called in, when force can be used, how questioning can work in order to protect both the police officers and the students and staff rights. There's also there isn't the type of training that police officers need to be in schools around children. Chief Major Hamm just described what the screening criteria are, but did not say anything about training on child development, how to work with young people.
And in fairness, I didn't ask him, and I do plan to ask that. Jennifer Egan, is there what would you like to add to what Catherine said, or does it look the same way to you?
I will just add that one of the key differences is that the Baltimore Police Department report directly to a chief who reports to the mayor, and the school police are under Mr. Perry, who is under the superintendent, who is then reports both to the state and the city. So there are levels of bureaucracy between that prevent and have led to a less accountable police department compared to the Baltimore Police Department, which I wouldn't tout as the most accountable police department in the country by any stretch of the imagination.
I was going to say, well, first of all, just in terms of size, I should have checked. I don't know offhand how big the Baltimore Police Department is right now, but there's 144 school police officers, right?
126
school police officers. So it's just smaller. That seems like that might yield more accountability. You don't see it that way.
I think it should, and it can. I think that very easily can. That has not been my experience to date of that police force. I think that there have been real issues with transparency and with accountability.
Okay, and we should get into that, but I do want to give Carl Perry or Acting Chief Hamm a chance to respond. Mr. Perry?
Well, one thing I would like to say is our school police officers serve in a different capacity. They are there to serve and support the staff and the students to ensure a safe and orderly learning environment, where Baltimore City police officers are strictly enforcing the law, the laws of the lands on the streets, okay, where our school police officers positively engage students. And what we saw 2 weeks ago
was not positive engagement.
It was an aberration of what takes place in schools on a regular basis.
It was an aberration?
Because what took place was something totally appalling, as Kate said. Totally appalling. You know, when I spoke to school police officers after that, you know, they were embarrassed by what they observed, because that's not how they interact on a regular basis with children. They were totally embarrassed. I told them, keep your head up. We know the great things that you're doing for children. Keep your head up. You're here to serve all the stakeholders of Baltimore City.
And
we can't judge all of our officers by the actions of those two or even the one last year?
There's a lot that I want to get into, and we're going to have to take a break soon, so I'm a little cautious about starting a big topic. Training has come up. Kate or Jennifer, tell me what your what you see or what you think you see about training.
So, Jennifer, what we have seen is that Baltimore City School Police undergo the same cadet training as any other police officer in the state of Maryland, but they do not undergo any specialized training related to child development, no mandatory training related to de-escalation, and for that reason, they aren't specialized or they don't have the skills or training necessary to work day in and day out with children, especially children with disabilities, children coming from traumatic situations. And those training requirements must be made more robust if we're going to continue to allow school police officers in Baltimore City public schools.
Do you I want to get your thoughts on that, Mr. Perry, but I want to find out whether do you happen to know in other jurisdictions that detail regular police officers into schools? Is there special training for those school resource officers? Kate, do you know?
Yes, there is special training for those school resource officers. Which it does not seem to be happening at the same rate in Baltimore City schools. And one of the ways we can see that, Jenny mentioned the fact that there was a limited training for how to deal with students who may have special needs, for example. And we know the limited data we have that there is a significant disproportionate impact on students with disabilities in our schools. They are arrested at a higher rate by far than they should be. I think, 50% of the arrests have been for students with disabilities in this year alone. And that really clearly shows a lack of training of how to deal with those students and how to accommodate their needs and recognize manifestation of disability. And so it is one example of the many we have of there being a lack of the type of training that is required to be working with students in a school with students every day.
So this is confusing to me, Carl Perry, because as an outsider, when I hear Baltimore has a dedicated its own school's police force, I just assumed that there is specialized training and that those officers, because that is their whole assignment, they're not sort of passing through an assignment as a school resource officer and 6 months from now they're going to be on the street. I just assume there was a lot of training. Is this a fair picture that we've just heard from Jennifer Egan and Kate Rabb, Acting Chief Hamm?
Again, I would have to disagree with what Ms. Egan is saying in regards to training and mandatory training.
What kind just of training this, do officers get?
Just before this school year started, for instance, we provided trauma-informed care to all of the officers. We provided members of their coalition, who's in the Maryland Disability Law Center, did understand in the student disability process from the Maryland Disability Law Center. They provided training for us before school started. We currently have been in conversations with NASRO, that's the National Organization of School Resource Officers. They're providing training for all of our officers in August with principals, and they go over educational rights, student with disabilities. We have a mental health training this month, March the 30th, 31st, and the 1st of April during spring break, where we're bringing in mental health training through Maryland State Department of Education. The Maryland School Safety Center is going to fund that training that we'll have. It will be 8 hours of training on each day. Department of Juvenile Services is also providing equity training for us. We've been in conversations with them so that they could provide training on school to prison pipeline. They can talk about the disproportionate number of African Americans that are caught up in the system and things that we can do to deter that from happening.
A lot to talk about. That's Akil Hamm, acting chief of the Baltimore City Schools Police Force. We're going to take a short break here on Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking with Catherine Rabb, Education Policy Director of Advocates for Children and Youth, and Jennifer Egan, Juvenile Public Defender, and Carl Perry, Chief School Supports Officer for the Baltimore City Public Schools. Have you seen the video of the incident at Reach Partnership School? What was your reaction, or what is your experience with police in the Baltimore City schools? Join this conversation. Call us at 410- 770-662-8780 or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about school police. Early this month, a Baltimore school police officer was filmed hitting and kicking a teenager while another officer watched. The school system placed the officers on administrative leave without pay now that they have been charged criminally. Critics say the problem is not a few bad apples. They're calling for an overhaul of the system. With me in the studio is Carl Perry, chief school supports officer for Baltimore City Schools, also juvenile public defender Jennifer Egan, and Catherine Rabb, education policy director of Advocates for Children and Youth. We would love to hear from you. Many folks have already called us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Let me pick up where we left off. Acting Chief Hamm gave us a long list of training, reading your facial expressions. Kate Rabb, I didn't think you were impressed with it. Why do you say that the training that school police officers get is not adequate?
Well, we've seen incidents like the one we saw earlier this week, which just happened to be captured on cell phone. But we do know that there are excessive arrests happening in Baltimore City schools. We're 9% of the school population across the state, but at least over 45% of the school-based arrests across the state. There is no reason why there should be so many more arrests in Baltimore City schools than there are in schools in any of the other 23 school jurisdictions in the state. It suggests to all of us working on these issues, and it drives home the fact that the training is insufficient to work with students, to know when behavior is simply behavior that has traditionally been handled by school discipline, which can continue to be handled by school discipline, and which does not need to turn into something that would drive a student into the criminal justice system and down the school-to-prison pipeline.
And I'll also note that although I'm very happy to hear that all those trainings are in progress, most of the trainings that Major Chief Hamm listed are upcoming and trainings that they have recently scheduled. Those aren't trainings that the school police force have had. He talked about getting training from the National School Resource Officers Organization. That is some of the training that other jurisdictions have been getting for years. But Baltimore City School Police currently has not had or undergone that training. Most of the things that he listed are being put into place now in reaction to this horrible event. But they haven't, up till now, been trained in any of those techniques or methods.
As I mentioned, there are quite a few people who want to join this conversation. Catrice is calling us from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much. I'm Principal Wiley at Friendship Academy of Engineering Technology Middle High School, currently in Baltimore City. How's everyone today?
Good, thank you.
Principal Wiley, how are you?
I'm great. So I wanted to comment on a couple of things that were stated already. One, the training. To the egregious crimes that I've actually dealt with, and not just myself, but various colleagues of mine, and the fact of the state of our city at this time as to why there may be a little bit more arrests in our LEA in comparison to other LEAs across the state of Maryland. First and foremost, a lot of the training that Major Hamm mentioned, they definitely, in some instances, most instances have received, but let's talk about the training that the school police officers receive with principals and with staff members and teachers that is not always mentioned or may not be known by Ms. Rabb or Ms. Egan. They've received restorative practices training. They have received training in regards to special education at the school level, and every school has its own unique set of students and its own unique set of qualitative and quantitative data that suggests different types of training. So if the school police officer is a part of the school community, they have to receive training at the school level that is reported to all of the powers that be. Also, let's talk about the egregious crimes that the students have come
Principal
with.
Willie, let me let Jennifer Egan respond to what you've said so far.
So,
Jennifer?
I think that Principal Wiley is correct in that a school police officer in her building may sit in on continuing education classes that schools have. that is not adequate, nor is it mandatory. So those sorts of things that someone learns on the job or trainings that they pick up along the way is very different than mandatory training that officers get before they are allowed to interact with our children, before they're put in a school building and given the authority over kids who have of variant needs and challenges. So although those things are good and positive, that doesn't mean that there are established trainings that are mandatory for police coming in. That's just not happening right now. And not only should there be those trainings mandatory before an officer ever sets foot in a school building, what kinds of trainings those are should be uniform. This should not be officer to officer and whether or not they are motivated to get that kind of training. It should be required. It should be required and it should happen before they're set foot in that school building.
As a public defender who works with juveniles, do you see cases that you think indicate poor training?
All the time. I will say, unlike Ms. Rabb, I was not shocked. I was appalled by the video, but I wasn't shocked because I see instances like this almost every day. Incidents where children are removed from by police officers for low-level infractions where it is actually illegal for them to be removed from the school, like lack of school uniform or for not bringing a parent in with them for a conference, all which the code of conduct bars principals from excluding children. But we often have police officers removing kids for those reasons and reportedly doing it very, very roughly. This is not an aberration or an isolated incident in terms of what I see come in through the door every day. And I often have police officers in terms of training on the stand who say that they are not familiar with the code of conduct, that they are not familiar with the regulations about school-based arrests that are in the code of Maryland regulations, and that they have not been trained on special education and that they have no idea whether the child that they arrested who was having an episode or who was upset has an IEP or is a special education student. I have had, I would say, dozens of officers testify that they have no training, nor do they have any knowledge of those very important things.
I beg to differ at this time. This is Carl Perry.
I
was a principal for 15 and a half years before I took this position, and my officers were part of my school family. And a successful school, one that's thriving on student success, is a family. So my officers would come to the training. They would come to the training. They did know the code of conduct. My officers did. Now, Ms. Egan may have had some instances where some officers didn't. However, over my 15 and a half years, my officers were ingrained in the school culture. They were not there as disciplinarians. They were there as support. So much so that when we went to the redeployment plan, I went from 3 officers to 0 officers. They would come in during the multi-campus approach because officers were there as support. So during the community policing, they went throughout the community as opposed to staying in my building.
Well, I want to get into that, too, but I want to understand then why there are so many instances that a juvenile public defender deals with that don't match your experience as a principal of officers who are very attuned to who are very well trained and attuned to the needs of the kids.
I would like to find out who those officers are or who those officers were.
Well, shouldn't you already know if there are problem officers?
If I had that information, we would have addressed it. However, now we are thoroughly looking at our school police department. Thoroughly looking. Now, we've met with the advocates. We've met with Ms. Rabb, Ms. Egan. And as you see from the future trainings that we're going to undertake, we do see there's a need for change. We need more consistent training. I agree. We do. And we're going to implement that.
That is Carl Perry, Chief School Supports Officer for Baltimore City Schools, here on Midday on WYPR. Also with us is Jennifer Egan, public defender who works with juveniles, and Kate Rabb, Education Policy Director of Advocates for Children and Youth. And Jennifer Egan and Kate Rabb are part of the coalition. Tell me the coalition's name again.
It's the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline.
Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline. We have quite a few callers. We also have an email from David Pontius, who says, "Hi, I'm a senior at Baltimore City College High School. How can we trust what the school system says when they disclose little information, and what they do disclose is usually through legal records requests or generalized PowerPoints buried in meeting agendas? The recent incident just goes to show there are serious problems in the school police force that need to be rectified transparently and with parents, students, and teachers. After a year of going to meetings and interacting with the school system on this issue, I have lost faith in the school system, including Dr. Thornton and the school board, to handle this internally in a competent manner. I think I've read that David Pontius is active in City Block.
He's also a member of my student safety advisory panel.
And he says he's lost faith in the school system. What would you say to David Pontius?
I would say to David, at first, well, we're going to have a meeting in the next several weeks, so I look forward to meeting with him again. But I would also ask, David, when was the last time there was a student arrested at City College?
And that means that he's got a pretty good school experience?
Yes.
And so why is he worried?
No, not why is he worried, but where is he getting his information from? If he hadn't seen a student arrested at City College.
Well, I mean, one of the things he raises, and Principal Willie raised it, and I think Jennifer has too, and that is data collection. I mean, what aside from what people hear from friends and what people see in their own school, what kind of picture emerges from data collected about interactions between Baltimore school police and students?
In the past, there wasn't a formalized data collection management tool. However, moving forward, there are new state regulations, and we are going to be compliant with the request of the state.
When do they go into effect, Kate?
They're supposed to be in effect this school year. So this school year, all of the jurisdictions across the state are supposed to be submitting data on arrests and referrals to law enforcement that come from school-based incidents. But we have been asking for over a year now to understand for the data so that we understand what's happening in city schools, because those data typically are available in other school systems due to the fact of the relationship, the contract between the local school police force and the school system. In other jurisdictions, because we have our own school police force, there was an ability to not be transparent about what was happening despite the requests from community members and advocates. And it is, you know, it has been disturbing, and it has hidden a lot of what Jenny has seen with her clients. And it's allowed for the school system to say, you know, everything's all right, when that is not what we see in state collection of Department of Juvenile Services data, and it's not what we experience through our public defenders and our students who are being arrested in schools.
Jennifer?
So although the city schools has not consistently collected the data, the Maryland Department of Juvenile Services does collect and puts out a very clear resource guide every year, the data resource guide. And they've been collecting school-based arrests and reporting them out for years. And although there's been a 50% reduction in juvenile complaints in Baltimore in the last 5 years, the number of school-based complaints has stayed very consistent. So that in 2014, there were 630 school-based arrests. And last year in 2015, there was a reduction. It was the first reduction we've seen in years. There was approximately 427 school-based arrests. But it's not just the number of arrests that we're talking about. Those have gone down slightly just in the last year since the incident at Vanguard Middle School came to light and the change in the deployment policy
happened.
This is the
incident where the officer used a baton on the three middle school girls?
Yes.
And she was criminally charged after
that. She was criminally charged and pled guilty to second-degree assault, which would not, I will say, exclude her from being a school police officer because of LIBOR and because of the hiring practices.
The Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights.
Yes. A second-degree assault conviction would not keep an officer from being a school police officer. That's what we saw with Anthony Spence and Severna Bias. Both had previous charges. I'm not sure of the result of those. It's not just the number of incidents, however. It's also the quality of those arrests. I've tracked all the school-based arrests for the 2014-2015 school year that came through the public defender's office and was able to show that 74% of them were found non-delinquent, diverted, or otherwise dismissed or thrown out of court. So when we're talking about those 630 arrests, 74%, or about three-fourths of them, are cases that should never be in that system to begin with. These are low-level offenses. The most commonly charged offense is second-degree assault, school fights, and the next highest is theft. These are minor, small things that for years we handled as a matter of school discipline, and that's how these incidents should be handled and should be continued to handle. When 75% of the arrests that school police are making are thrown out, diverted, or dismissed, there's a serious problem, not just with the number, but with the quality of those arrests.
Carl Perry?
Can I respond to
Acting Chief Hamm, yes.
Part of what Ms. Egan was saying? I would like her to clarify what she means by school-based arrest, because I think she's combining physical arrest, where a child may be handcuffed and taken to juvenile services and formally charged, with a referral that may go to the Department of Juvenile Justice. I think she's combining those numbers.
It's not, I mean, they both sound, as a parent, I would be alarmed at either one of them. You're saying, I mean, one is handcuffed, one is not. They're both referrals to juvenile justice, right?
I mean that by simply saying this. We have a diversion program that does not go to the Department of Juvenile Services. A parent can go down to juvenile services and file a formal complaint, and it can go to court. And we can be charged, and when I say charged, I mean the school system can be charged as a physical, as an arrest of what she's saying, because the parent goes down and files charges. Do you understand what I mean?
No, I'm lost.
Okay. So say a child commits a crime, they get arrested, they get handcuffed, they get transported to juvenile services. A parent can also file a complaint. They can walk into Gay Street, file a complaint, and it'll still be counted as a physical arrest, even though we didn't arrest the child.
So you're raising the question of whether some of the incidents that Jennifer Egan,
right,
the public defender, pointed to us, that three-fourths of her number end up not being upheld. You're saying some of those were things that the parents may have generated that weren't generated by contacts generated by school police officers. Do I have that right?
I'm absolutely saying that that's the case. And also, just to go back to what she said about the majority of the arrests that we make, let me remind you of the city that we're in. Last year, we had 344 homicides. 22 of those homicides were juveniles. We do have violent crime that occurs sometimes in schools.
Right.
And the majority of the kids.
I do want to talk about that, but I want to give Jennifer Egan a chance to respond to what you just said, and then we need to take a break.
So I think that citizens' complaints are a red herring. When we talk about arrests and referrals, first of all, police can also refer without making a physical arrest, without putting handcuffs on a child. They can forward a case.
But we don't.
They have for years done that. That practice has not completely ended. And all of that could be fixed, and we could address how many of those are that way if the school would collect and report out that data. But, of course, they've chosen not to do that. This is the data that we have, and that's the data we have to look at. If there are slight aberrations, that may be true. But this is a problem even with that. Even if some of these, some small percentage of these cases have that, this is a giant problem that alone is not an explanation for these numbers.
And I know Carl Perry wants to respond to that, but we do need to take a brief break here. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation and take more of your calls. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. Our email is midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about police in Baltimore City schools. Catherine Robb, Education Policy Director of Advocates for Children and Youth, is here. Jennifer Egan, Juvenile Public Defender in Baltimore City, is here in the studio. And Carl Perry, Chief School Supports Officer for Baltimore City Public Schools and the Acting Chief of the Baltimore City School Police Force. Akil Hamm is with us. Carl Perry, there was a point you wanted to make about arrests.
Well, two things I'd like to say. For instance, one thing that we could explore in the future, because this is a collaborative effort right now, is to address DJS and how they actually...
Department of Juvenile Services.
Correct. How they actually calculate the arrest that was being made.
Okay, we're getting lost,
right,
in statistics.
I know that Ms. Egan mentioned a fight, someone being arrested for a fight. However, it's been a long time since everyone in here has actually been or attended school. Now, a fight is no longer, Sheila, you slapping me and I slapping you back, and it stops there. A fight could be you pulling out my hair, or someone pulling out your hair and dragging around the floor. If me as a parent, that happens to my child, I'm going to come to the school and say I want to press charges. The officer is going to say, I cannot file charges, but I can write up the report for you. If that parent takes that report down to Gay Street, that's counted as an arrest.
Okay.
So our arrest numbers are significantly down. We have 74 arrests to date this year, significantly down. However, the paper arrest, we don't calculate that because we don't know if you as a parent are going to actually take that paper form down.
I want to pull in some of the folks who are calling us. Federico is calling us from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I'm going to be very, very brief. I'm a principal in Baltimore City, and I didn't catch the first part of today's discussion. But I can say from my experience as 28 years in Baltimore City, I've seen school police officers, and I don't really even see them acting like this perception that they have around that they come in and they arrest and that's all they do with kids. If anything, I see them coming in saying, kids, what can we do to help you? Parents, what can we do to help you? I've seen officers go so far as come in, meet with me when we have families in crisis. And I remember last year we had a family that was homeless. The officer gave the family furniture and paid for a month's rent for this family. And I think a lot of what they do goes unnoticed because there's a perception that they're just this occupying force. And that's not what they are.
I appreciate your calling. Thank you. Another principal has called us. Richard from Baltimore, welcome to Midday.
Hi. Not a principal, but I do want to respond to this. Nobody's commending the chief for having the courage to simply get rid of those two guys. He could have stopped and just fired one, but he had the courage to remove both of them. And the other thing is the liberalism of our school system is what are preventing my kids, African-American kids, from getting educated because we live in a fantasy of statistics that don't dictate the reality on the ground, that our kids are in a troubled state. And like the guy said, a fight is not a fight in a violent environment. And anybody that would attempt to remove cops from schools doesn't understand what it's like. And there's nobody poor, black, or with children in schools representing what the poor black parents are simply saying. It's only the liberals who can quote statistics and facts that drum up fear that leave our kids vulnerable from getting taught. What happened last week was bad, but it's not what the teachers want. It's not what the spouses of those who are principals in the school want to be in an environment where our spouses are there with nobody there to protect them. These guys act as a sense of comfort. What he should be is given an applause and ability to get the bad ones out.
Richard, thank you. Thank you for the call. Jennifer Egan, you had a response?
I do just want to address the idea about violence and that fights are somehow worse than they were back in the day, and the sort of nostalgia that makes it seem like there was less crime or less fights or less violence in the past, when in fact the opposite is true. Juvenile crime and crime in schools has dropped significantly over the last 25 years. In 1983, there were 121 guns found in schools, in Baltimore City public schools. That is a significant, we don't have that kind of issue in schools anymore. Those numbers and that kind of violence, those kind of fights, those issues have gone down significantly. I'm not saying that we're free of them, and I'm not saying that Baltimore City's public schools are safe. I am saying that our children are coming from a very violent neighborhoods, often coming into schools, experiencing a lot of trauma. And while there are some great school police officers, and they go above and beyond duty, and I would not deny that, they are doing it because they're the only ones in school providing that kind of support. And although they are providing that support, they're not the appropriate people to be doing it. We should have school psychologists, restorative justice workers, social workers who are there to take care of our homeless students, who are there to deal with trauma. And although school police officers are filling that role, it's because we've allowed school police to expand so exponentially without putting a check on it. In 2002, we only had 95 school police officers. Last year, we had 144. Today, Chief Major Hamm says there's 126. That's while our school population has dropped dramatically and school complaints and juvenile complaints have dropped dramatically. So although everyone is very afraid of violence, and they should be, we also have to keep in mind that there have been real changes and real success.
Do you want to respond to that, Carl Perry?
Let's be clear, and it's similar to what the recent caller just said. School police are there as a safety measure, as a part of the family, as I said before. They are not there as the enforcement. They are not disciplinarians. They are there part of the family. Baltimore City was identified as the 19th most violent city in the entire world. many times some of these situations come into the building. We locked down three schools earlier today because there was a shooting in the neighborhood and the person ran through the schools. We have to make sure we protect.
Ran through three schools?
Ran through past the schools. Didn't come into the building, but through the campus. We have to make sure our children are safe. Our children deserve to be safe. Our staff deserves to be safe. But if you go into a courthouse, there's an officer.
But, of course, the question raised by the video that we saw this month and the incident with Officer Pulley, who was criminally charged after batoning three middle school kids. I mean, you talk about we're really serious about investigating and really serious about making changes. That incident happened, again, before you came to your current job, but it happened like a year and a half ago. And have there been changes in either the training, the screening, or the policies that govern school police since that case? Acting Chief Hamm?
Let me just say this, and I said this before, not on your show. The actions of these officers are not consistent with our training, our policies and procedures, and our general orders.
But how many inconsistencies do you see before you think that this isn't working? There's some skepticism about your promises to investigate and make things right now when we've seen incidents before that haven't sparked changes, apparently.
And Sheila, I'll just say that incident happened in October with Lakeisha Pulley. School officials were aware of that video and saw that video in October. Lakeisha Pulley stayed on her job for 4 months working in that school, charged the three little girls, and nothing happened to her until that video was made public. So school officials didn't investigate it, didn't discipline her until it was made public. Instead, they pressed forward with charges against those three little girls instead.
And again, I know that incident was before either of you
was in the
job that you are in now. But why should we think that the response to this current public attention will be any different than the response to that one?
Because our children deserve the very best. And if they didn't receive the best in the past, they will definitely receive it now.
I think we're short on time, but Derek in Pasadena, if he's still with us, has a question. Derek, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, question and a statement. I'll be quick. I don't have my job is not at stake participating in this conversation, so I'll say it bluntly. The police officers are lying. They typically use very self-serving arguments. No, sir, you don't get to call out somebody else's data if you don't provide any of your own. And just getting to your job, I realize that that's part of the issue. But on the other hand, you've got to understand, if you're a student, you don't have reason to trust police officers, despite the campaign rhetoric, as it were. And so my question becomes, based on the idea that police are severely undertrained, even compared to teachers, to be by those students, what real need outside of safety do police officers serve? And if they only serve a safety need, really, in my mind, they should be, to some extent, out of sight, out of mind.
I don't know that I follow that last point, Derek, but let me see what kind of response you get here at the table. Thank you for calling. So Derek is saying, what need does a school police officer serve besides safety? Is safety the primary function?
Safety is the primary function, but we serve as part of the school community, like Mr. Price said. A lot of our officers are coaches, they're mentors in the schools, they have mentoring programs, they do summer camp, they do school-related education like gang resistance training, they do teen dating violence training, they do drug abuse resistance education. So they're not only police officers, but they're law-related educators, they're in the schools to provide safety for the children, but they're also there as part of the school community.
Kate Perry, Derek said, safety should be out of sight, out of mind. Is that a realistic attitude given the violence in the city and including violence in schools?
Well, it is everyone's first priority to make sure that children and staff are safe in our schools. That does not mean that we need to have the system that we have now. As Jenny pointed out, we have in Baltimore City the highest concentration of poverty in our schools of anywhere across the state. And we also are facing, this for the second year in a row, of over, more than $20 million cut to our school budget, and yet we are still spending $9 million to have this incredible police force that we have all talked about not being well enough trained to be in the schools and around children. And what we could be doing with that money instead is providing the type of wraparound services that our students need to succeed. We are instead spending all this money on police officers, which is pushing them down a path into the criminal justice system where we are doing anything but creating life opportunities for them.
We are looking, and it's Kate Rabb, not Kate Perry. Kate, welcome to the family.
We are not related.
I'm sorry. Did I do that?
That's fine. But one thing we are looking closely at with the budget shortfalls and the need for interventions is reducing the school police budget this year and also providing additional incentives. I've been working with some groups, and I'll name one, not to say that we've formalized any contractual obligations, but City Year. So we can provide interventions and supports to schools, various schools that we identify, to make sure that our students are achieving. Remember, student achievement is our ultimate goal. Student success, we want to make sure that all of our students are college ready and college eligible, and that our students are also ready for a career of their choice. That's our goal. Safety is the foundation, but student academic achievement, that's our ultimate goal. We want to make sure that Baltimore City begins or returns to becoming a premier city, not only in the East Coast, but in the entire United States of America.
So we have just a minute left. Acting Chief Hamm, what do you do next? What happens next, given this public attention?
Well, what we're doing, like Mr. Price said, we're looking very closely at our training, our recruitment, our retention. We're also looking at the department from the top to bottom with our policies and procedures. We have been communicating with the Maryland Coalition on School Discipline, looking at our policies. We've been coming to the table looking at our policies. We're implementing a student safety advisory council. We've initiated a school police community advisory board.
There's
so
a
we're
lot.
Doing a number of things
and
to try
flat
to improve
out of time.
The department.
I want to thank you for being here, Acting School Police Chief Akil Hamm, Carl Perry, Chief School Supports Officer for Baltimore City Public Schools, and two members of the Maryland Coalition to Reform School Discipline, Catherine Rabb, Education Policy Director of Advocates for Children and Youth, and Jennifer Egan, a Juvenile Public Defender. Thank you. There's a lot more to talk about, I know, and I hope we will have a chance to do that. I want to thank our listeners also. And tomorrow, Montgomery County claims they have ended homelessness among veterans. How did they do it? What's the rest of the state doing to catch up? I'm Sheila Cast. I hope you'll join us for that. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.